This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 43, sponsored by ComicHole.com. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is our 43rd episode, which is dangerously close to the 50s, which I believe indicates a year. Ah. Anyway, I'm Josh, and I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And Connor.
Hi.
We are iFanboy.com, and what is that, you might ask? Well, it's a website where we started because we like comics and we like to talk about them, and every week we will read a whole bunch of them, and then one of us will do their pick of the week, or the comic book they thought to them was the best thing that they read that week, write up a review, then people talk about that review on the website, and then we come here and record a podcast about it, which is what we're doing now. Now, we're going to get on to the pick in a second, but we've learned the disclaimer is important. It's a review show. You've had a few days to read them by now, at least, so there may be some spoilers. We're going to talk about things that happened in the books from this week. So if you haven't got a chance to get through your books, you haven't picked up your books yet, be warned. It should be noted that while I am once again in sunny Los Angeles and Connor is in beautiful Brooklyn, Ron is found his way to the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, I am in actually now sunny Seattle.
Really?
Yeah, which is — it was overcast this morning, but now it's actually nice out. So the wonders of the internet.
First time in Seattle?
Yes, this is actually my first time in the Pacific Northwest ever.
Have you tried heroin yet?
No, not yet. Oh, but I've been offered by some guy in flannel standing outside my hotel.
Nice.
Yeah, now there's...
Do you have a guitar and a stubble?
No.
You should go see Alice in Chains while you get the chance.
He's dead, isn't he?
Yeah, that's the joke.
Yeah.
Although I heard an ad for a concert for them the other day, and I was like,
I think they're still going. I think what's-his-face, the guitarist dude, is still going with
whatever.
It. Good for him. I'm looking for a place. I'm looking for a place to get a good piece of pie. So that's my plan.
Now, isn't it appropriate we had music talk because of the pick of the week, Ron, was...
The pick of the week was...
It's not going to let us flounder any longer.
Yay, Seattle. So the pick of the week this week was actually a surprising one to some, and it was Phonogram Number 1 by Image Comics. This week was actually, I think we all three of us were kind of celebrating this week because it was, you know, I only bought 7 books. Connor, didn't your purchase, wasn't yours like in the teens, and you spend like $14 or something like that?
$14. I paid with cash.
I spent a merciful $15.
Nice. So it was like one of those like breath of fresh air kind of weeks, and it was actually kind of a good week for in terms of timing, because any other week, a book like Phonogram probably would have gotten pushed down the stack with you know, Civil War and 52 and all the other amazing superhero-y kind of things happening. But since it was a lighter week, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to consider some books that we don't normally talk about. Leading into it, I was kind of torn trying to decide which one was going to be the pick. Out of the 7 books I bought, there were 3 kind of front runners. The first one being The Boys, number 1, by Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson. Fell, number 6, by Warren Ellis and Ben Templesmith. And then Phonogram, number 1, by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey. And I probably mispronounced those names, and I apologize. We'll get to the Boys and Fell in a little bit. But Phonogram really stuck out to me because... And I don't know who I was with. It might have been one of you, or it might have been Gordon the intern, or somebody in San Diego. But at one point when we were walking around the convention, do you remember we walked by the Image booth and I kind of stopped and I just paused and I looked at the Image booth for a second and then we just kept on going? Do you guys remember that moment?
I don't remember anything about that whole week.
Okay, well...
I was probably being bombarded with people.
All I remember is what we shot on video. If it wasn't on those tapes... It may as well not have happened.
Well, what had happened was is that I'd walked by the Image booth and I saw hanging off one of the tables was a poster for Phonogram, and it was the cover of the first issue, I believe, which is up on ifanboy.com, which you can take a look at. And just for some reason, it just jumped out at me, and I just kind of took a mental picture of it. And I said, I got to remember that title. I got to, you know, I think that's going to be something I'm into. And I don't know if it was the name Phonogram or the fact that there's a record as the O in the logo, or the fact that the cover art just seemed very familiar to me. It just seemed like you know, and you could tell by looking at it, the people on the cover are of the, you know, like there's, you know, girls with short haircuts and with a Union Jack flag, and one girl's got a lot of, you know, eye makeup, and her shirt says Riot Slut, and the guy looks somewhat, you know, wearing all black and with his, you know, kind of indie rock glasses, and it says, this looks like something that's probably something I'm going to be interested in, giving my interest in music. So finally, it came out, and I picked it up and read it, and it was awesome. I mean, it was really cool. It's, you know, dripping in pop culture and Britpop music references, which is probably one of the reasons why I ended up picking it, because, as you guys know, I love Britpop and I love, you know, pop culture and all that kind of stuff. Basically, it's the first issue of – it's a little bit of a cult kind of magic-y twist to it. I guess almost reminiscent of Hellblazer, except that I never read Hellblazer, so I don't know if that's
– I read Hellblazer. I don't see where you're going with that.
Well, isn't Hellblazer like a little magic-y?
I found a lot more like Scott Pilgrim in that sense.
Okay. I actually have yet to read Scott Pilgrim yet. That's still on my list. I still need to pick that up. But we've got the main character, David Cole, who we're introduced to as he's going to a show, a women's Lady Fest show, to see some, you know, singer-songwriter girls play. And the main reason why he's going is because apparently he has some sort of nemesis, some sort of woman nemesis who he's never met, and he heard...
Well, that's not the main reason he's going.
Well, that's not the main reason. It's one of the reasons, you know what I mean? Like, he's kind of on the prowl, and he bumps into his nemesis who he's never met, and they kind of throw down, and it kind of starts off this whole idea of this music kind of influenced magical powers. And we get a little bit of background of the importance of music and the connection of people and a hint of the kind of powers that are associated with them. The art, you know, kind of black and white. It's black and white, kind of detailed lines. You know, not very complicated, I don't think. But good storytelling. I thought Jamie McKelvey. I was impressed by the layouts and that sort of stuff.
Very clean, very clean,
very, very clean, clean, very consistent too.
Yeah,
it's one of those books where you got a bunch of white people in a black and white book, which can be hard to tell people apart, but he was good at differentiating.
Yeah, and really, I mean, the book reminded me of it's a feeling that I haven't had in a few years now. And for those of you, you know, I know we get a lot of flack or not flack or whatnot because we do talk a lot about superhero books. And, you know, with Civil War going on, with all the other, with Infinite Crisis and all that kind of stuff going on, it's hard not to. But I think all three of us do really do appreciate a good indie book. And I've been reading, you know, and I know it's Image, and so I just, I don't know, to this day, I don't know if Image is truly an indie book
or not.
It's
an indie book.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one of the big...
the way that Image technically works is, you do a book,
right,
and you deliver it to them, and then they distribute it through their means, and then they take a piece of it, and you pay them back for the money they spent, and you get to keep the rest. You own it. It is indie.
Right. Yeah. And well, I mean, I guess it all depends on your point of view. I mean, some people see it as the big two and everyone else. Some people see it as the big three, and some people would lump in Dark Horse as the big four. You know, but I think I still believe Image is indie. So
well, this is
probably 10 or 15 years ago, you could have really made a case for Image, but Image is not the same as it was before.
Right. Nowadays, yeah. It's a distributor for indie works. I mean, if you don't consider Image indie, this book definitely. You know, the book.
Oh yeah, this book is completely indie. I mean, and the fact that it's being published by Image just makes it somewhat that much easier to get.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. But so back to my original point is that we do enjoy a good indie book, and you know, the black and white. Cool, you know, one creator or sometimes a writer and one artist, not a lot, you know, not a colorist, not an inker, not this whole list of credits, you know, kind of the focused storytelling. And a couple of months ago, I was bitching on the site about how there weren't really any many indie books like that around recently that I was really into. And
it's so, all zombies or
it's
crime.
Exactly, and that really isn't my kind of thing. And even the magic. You know, the magic occult kind of twist to this usually isn't my kind of thing, but I think the Britpop is enough to get me there. But it was kind of a breath of fresh air to have a black and white, you know, indie book again to read and get excited about. And it's hard to describe, and I know this is, you know, the whole point of this is me talking about it and describing it, but it's hard to describe why I liked it or what it was. And I can't just say, you know, I can't say it was just the art or just the story or just the music or just the thing, but it's a feeling you get, and I mentioned it in my review. It's hard to describe, but it's kind of like you know what it is when you see it, and it just kind of clicks for you. And it's, the same thing happened for me with Strangers in Paradise, with Stray Bullets, with all these, you know, kind of good black and white, you know, indie books that I've read over the years that you just like. Kane by Paul Grist is one of the ones that the first moment I saw the cover of the first trade paperback I bought of Kane and Jim Hanley's universe, like back in 1997, I was like, yes, I need to pick that up. And I had that same feeling when I saw that poster, and luckily, thank God it didn't suck. I was kind of worried that my instincts were rusty, but they pulled out a winner. So, and I know you guys were able to get your hands on a copy of this. What did you guys think? Do you guys agree with me or disagree? Or
I think reading it, there was no way you couldn't have picked it. I mean, I was reading it and going, all right, this is the book for Ron. I mean, you're so steeped in the music that is being celebrated in this book that there's just really no way
to get around it. And it's cool because that's a whole kind of, you know, subculture that is out there, and it's gotten more popular in the past 5 years or so, but not this aspect of it, of going to a CD place and seeing bands play and like that kind of feeling you get from the music. I mean, it's become much more commercial here in the States, but I still think it's I think it's still, you know, there's this still pure feeling to it, both in England as in some parts of the United States. And I think the book really did a good job of capturing that. And you can really tell that these guys are into that same kind of stuff, so it's kind of cool in that way. So,
I just finished it. Like, I literally got home and I read it, and because I knew we had to come and do this.
We got to come and do this.
No, I wanted to make sure I finished it before we started recording.
I know.
Gotta make the donuts.
I think there was things I liked about it and things that I didn't. I think style-wise, it seems to be – it's a lot about sort of flashy wordplay. Like, he calls himself a phallomancer, I think, at one point. No, a phallocrat, which is like – you know, like, it's all sort of fancy, intelligent words a lot of times. And I think sometimes that for me, masked a little bit of what the story was trying to do. Just a little bit. Like, it was kind of – some of the dialogue was so stylized that I couldn't quite follow what the story actually was, because it was almost like trying to be too impressive, which I think was a function of the main character being like this.
Cock.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, he was. And I'm getting a little sick of the protagonist being like a really intelligent chauvinist jerk.
Well, but that's the thing, I'm picking up on a little bit of it because I think a portion of that was the fact that this is the first issue,
mm-hmm.
and I was definitely left with more questions than I had answers, which is what a first issue should do.
Sure.
Like to be honest with you, I don't really 100% understand what exactly is going on. You know, I'm still kind of curious to see what's going to happen, and I'm not 100% convinced that David Cole is. I mean, he probably is the protagonist, but I'm not 100% convinced that he is the protagonist or is even a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
no,
so, like,
I don't think he is. I mean, I think he is the protagonist. There's an ad in the back for the next issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And it says,
absolutely.
"And I'm the hero," but like, he's a jerk. And this is something.
I think they're playing with that, though. I think
maybe.
Definitely, yeah.
But I also feel like it's been played.
Maybe
with
he thinks
bit.
He's the hero.
Right.
Well, I have a hard time with it sometimes in that. Yeah. And I think this is going to play into. We're going to talk about The Boys in a little bit.
Yeah.
And I have a really. It's just me. I have a really hard time. When I can't relate to the protagonist in something. If the story is about a person who I genuinely just don't like, I have a hard time liking the story sometimes. And I think that when you look at Preacher, Preacher was a story where it was all sorts of horrible things going on, and the guy was kind of a jerk, but underneath it was his heart. But then when people talk about later Garth Ennis work, some of his characters are just jerks. And I think it's sort of one of those things that comes out of sort of that late 90s British writer things. Like, the guy's cool as hell, but he's kind of a jerk, and he's kind of disconnected. And I just kind of got that from this, and I wasn't quite sure. Now, the other side of this is that I'm familiar with the names of all of the bands that they're talking about. I vaguely, but I don't know them like you do.
Right, yeah, and it's interesting also because they, which I think is really kind of a cool thing, and I don't think they needed to, but they put that glossary in the back.
Explained
every reference of everything, which is cool, which is funny because I read that entire glossary not because, you know, because I knew every reference that was in there, not like, ooh, I knew every reference, but I mean, I got every reference, but it was fun to see how they described it and how they, you know, and for somebody who has no idea, this could be not only a great entry point into, you know, into this kind of story, but also into the music, you know, which is pretty cool. And the thing is that you could have heard of Elastica. You know, and you could see the cover of this book and recognize that it's a homage to their first record, but I kind of in a sappy kind of way tried to get across what Elastica means to me.
I think you did a very good job, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Sincerity
thank you.
On the podcast.
Yes, thank you. and
the pick of the week, you should go check out Ron's pick of the week on the website because he goes really in depth into the whole. Music aspect of it,
right? and that's a big part of it, and to be completely honest and sincere, like I didn't make any of that shit up. Like I remember that day like it was yesterday, up to a certain point. It gets hazy after like I said after the first song, but from that point on, I was sold to Elastica. Now, unfortunately, I mean now that you know we're talking more about music than comics, but unfortunately, you know, Elastica was a flash in the pan as far as I figure because their second record didn't come out until like 2000, and by that point they had all were doing heroin, and it was awful, and it was just a sad mess, and Justine was a shadow of her former self. But in that moment the music just meant so much, and it's funny to see that this book really drives home that point that to a lot of people in this world, I think that music is a driving force, even if they're not a musician or even if they're not, you know, somebody who is music by profession.
However, you know, like this focuses very solely on one specific type of music, while the message may be universal. I do think that there are definitely going to be people out there who this doesn't speak to. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I almost look at this as this is very Nick Hornby-ian, if that's
a
word.
Kind of like if Nick Hornby wanted to do Sorcerers.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the way that he talks about the music affecting him and the girls, you know, how music affects them, and it's interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So, anyway, so I dug it. It hit me on a bunch of different notes, and I hear what you're saying, Josh. And to a certain degree, like it wasn't a grand slam. It wasn't like this isn't a legendary number one by my mind. But if anything, it showed a lot of potential, and I'm hooked for the next issue.
Right.
And if anything, it beat out Boys number one in my mind. Because really it came down between Boys number one and Phonogram number one.
I just think it's going to be not for everybody.
Oh yeah, exactly. No, yeah, yeah. But
we don't forget that we wield an awesome and terrible power now.
Yes, we do, because now
you go out there and tell people to buy a book, and they're going to go, what the hell was that? I don't know squat about Elastica. But if any of this sounds like it resonates with you, you probably will like the book. It's a well-done book. The art is great. I'm a big – man, I wish I knew the guy who did the art, and he could do my books because
– Jamie McKelvey.
Yeah. Well, because he draws good.
He draws
well. And you know, there's obviously a lot of intelligence and thought that's gone behind it. I don't – you know, it takes a while to put these kind of words out, but
– yeah. I mean, no, but you're right. It's not for everybody. But the thing is, not every comics are for everybody.
And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I don't buy into the normally I don't buy into the occult and all that kind of, you know, fairies and stuff like that. But you know, this is
he's terrified about his eternal soul.
I am. What soul? What soul? Hello. I'm empty. Empty shell filled with music. Anyway, so yeah, Phonogram number one. Pick it up, and while you're at it, pick up Elastica's first record. You'll thank us.
Let's continue on the non-Marvel DC front, because boy, yes. It's fun to wade out in these waters, isn't it?
It is. Well, we don't. But the thing is, and like I said, I think I said in the comments, you know, we do read these books. It's just that because we pick one book a week, and because there's so many superhero stuff going on, you know, like I know that, you know, I know myself and Josh to a certain degree, Connor not so much, but you'll read it when we recommend it or whatnot. But like, I consider myself a fan of indies, you know, and we just never get to talk about it. It bums me out sometimes. So
what does that mean? Mean not so much?
Well, you're just like a mainstream guy. That's all. No, I'm kidding.
I've got bookshelves full of indie books. I just don't talk about them.
Because he's embarrassed.
You do. How many have we bought for you though?
I don't know. Not many.
You made him mad.
Right, all of us like
of
the indies. I know. Okay, all of us. So which one do you want to talk about, Fell or the Boys?
Let's start with the Boys.
All right, the Boys.
Okay, I'll go on this. We got here is Garth Ennis, who should need no introduction on writing chores. And then Derek Robertson, who I'm staring at my two Derek Robertson pages from Transmetropolitan on the wall right now, who is a huge favorite artist of mine.
I don't really like his art that much.
Really?
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's great, and sometimes it doesn't fit. Yep. I think for Transmetropolitan, there was not a better artist. I think for this, it was great. I think when he was on that last Fury thing and what was the other one? He was really good on Wolverine when Rucka was writing it too.
Yeah, I think that's what made me not like it. Yeah, well. I didn't like that arc. I actually liked Boys, but Boys was this Boys number one was the best art that I've seen of him.
See, I didn't think so much. I thought the inking on this was a little, I don't know. I don't think it did his pencils a ton of justice. Wait a minute. Did he ink himself on this? Because I'm going to feel bad.
I think he did.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Nice.
Ouch.
Blame the inker.
There you go.
Well, who's this inker? Robertson? Who's this guy he thinks he can ink?
There was a different inker on Transmetropolitan, which to me is the gold standard of his work. And it's just got a lighter, it's less rendered, and I like that. But that's my own, like I like the art from Phonogram because it was so clean and there was nice lines. This is much more rendered, and the colored, you know, they're trying to put much more texture in it. But
you're still in that hole. You're not out.
What do you guys think?
I was let down.
I thought you said it was almost your pick.
It was, but it wasn't because
for a week. You didn't have a high standard.
Yeah, it wasn't because it let me down. I mean, that's the thing, is that like going into it, I'd heard a lot about it, and if you don't know about Garth Ennis, you know that he has a strong distaste for superheroes, and so the fact that he's doing a take on superheroes is enough to be, you know, kind of curious. But upon reading it, you know, like I thought that it was, I mean, it didn't, and again, it's a number one issue, and I gotta pare back the expectations and know that we gotta build up intrigue and we're just in Act One and all this kind of stuff. But like, I didn't see one character that I thought redeemable or interesting. I'm kind of a little over the gratuitous sex and violence and cursing and stuff. You know what I mean?
I definitely am.
Yeah, I mean, like the scene with the butcher guy and the chick in her office was I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or whatever, but I was just like, oh,
it's gratuitous.
Yeah,
it exists for no other purpose than titillation. And in comics, like a few years ago, we had never seen that in comics, so it was new. But now it's just like it's not doing anything for the story.
But the thing is that for some reason it's totally awesome in Preacher. You know,
Preacher
what I mean?
Had a heart. I think somebody said it on the website. Preacher had a heart to it that in the end, like you knew they weren't bad guys. Or you knew Jesse was a good guy, and it wasn't. Did you guys read Wanted?
No.
It was very similar to this in that it was about it was by Mark Miller, beautiful art by J.G. Jones. But it was about a guy who found out that his father was a supervillain, and then like he had all these abilities, and he became a supervillain. It was really, really nihilistic, and he would kill people, and he would rob, and he would rape people. And at the end of the day, it was like that. Was it about? And so it was out more. It was without. And this is like odd for me to be saying, but it was without moral grounding of any kind. And I was like, I don't want to read a story about somebody who is sort of worthless. You know, in that sense, like it doesn't, a character to me is not interesting just because he's really cool and really tough. And that's all that this main character is. He's really cool and really tough. I'm sure there's some backstory that explains it. And I'm sure that the guy here who basically is Simon Pegg may be the most interesting part of it. You know what I'm talking about? The guy whose girlfriend got killed.
See, I think to me that the whole Simon Pegg segment hit me emotionally like no comic has hit me in years.
No, that was the best part of this book.
I mean, I was really like sad for this guy and upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was probably the best part of it. I agree. Yeah,
because that was the part that had heart. That was the part you can relate to. I can't relate in any way to like a guy who's just a prick and is real tough and like this is the same thing as I was talking about with Phonogram. Like the main character here is the same kind of. Aren't I a badass? Like I don't like smug people, so I have a hard time reading it.
So conversely, did you get Fell number 6?
I missed it actually.
Oh, okay, because. You should, I mean, Connor, do you know where I'm going with this?
Go ahead and talk about it. I don't care.
I mean, if anything, the main guy in Fell is he's a good guy, and in this issue, more than anything, you really pick up on that because it starts off with him on his day off, and he stumbles into a case and ends up doing, you know, by far above and beyond the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and actually,
yeah, he can't not ignore people in trouble.
Yeah, and it was actually some. I mean, I actually found myself a little inspired by it. You know, I mean, like it was very. Fell number 6 was very inspiring. You know,
well,
so.
The heart of Warren Ellis's work has always been the optimism.
Yeah,
I mean, he's always got the tough badass characters who, you know, throw off one-liners and beat you up, but there's always a heart of optimism and humanity.
And it's really about disappointment in what didn't become of humanity. Kind of. Like, Spider Jerusalem was actually an optimist, and he was pissed off that people are such fuckbags. You know what I mean? Like, they're just awful, and I think that's what pissed him off.
Yeah.
And like, you know, if you ever read, like, Ministry of Space, that was sort of based on optimism and the idea that that would be what should happen and things like that.
Right. Right, yeah.
And I think the stuff when I don't like Warren Ellis, and I didn't read past the first issue of Next Wave, I think, but that was, again, it was just a thing that was like, look how tough and cool we are.
Well, that I mean, and Next Wave, I think, is very similar to.
Yeah, but people love that, and that's why Next Wave is popular.
Sure, but I'm sick of it.
That's why there's so many of these characters in comics, is that people like this.
Well, you know, like, why does this issue, why does the boys need to exist? Like, what is it doing that.
Well, I don't think it has anything to do with the main character. I think it just has to do with the fact that it's been done so many times before, and by Garth Ennis.
Yeah.
The whole theme of these guys who, you know, superheroes are stupid, and these guys.
Well, it's a self-loathing comic book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And why does this need to exist after the Authority?
Well, that's the thing. I think if the boys had come out maybe 3 or 4 years ago, at best, it would have blown us away. But now it's kind of like now that we've been through the ringer with this between like you said, Authority and any kind of jab that either DC or Marvel have taken at each other. You know what I mean? Like through the they've always had these kind of.
But
like,
then there's the fact that it's a number one, and we don't know, it could be going in a completely different direction.
True. It could.
This is largely
doubtful, but it's doubtful.
This is largely sort of, I would call it kind of exploitative and kind of, you know, it's just like shock value comic, and I'm so sick of shock value. I don't have any truck with it anymore at all.
Well, yeah, but if you look through the, I mean, I agree. I totally, like I said, I agree with you with the shock value, like the cursing and the sex and the violence and stuff like that. Were gratuitous and
you guys
were,
are prudes.
No, because I like when it fits and when it's appropriate, prudes. It's a good story. Listen. Well, because I realized that type of coming off.
You really got a rise out of him there, Connor. Josh is like, God damn it, I'm not a prude. No, but the thing is that I think if you look beyond the gratuitous sex and violence, it's another chapter in whatever this postmodern.
That's
you know,
the frustrating thing. It's not
exactly.
The violence.
Exactly.
It's the thematically, it's just been done to death.
I mean, well, this is.
But
just
then
like,
again, every you know, thematically, most comics have been.
Yeah,
done.
Yeah, but I mean, this is. I mean, is this self-aware kind of self-loathing kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink, bashing on superheroes, the bad girls of this decade. I mean, like
probably,
the,
but to me, the biggest thing is that it's Garth Ennis doing it again.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that it's some other person doing it again.
Well, when did he do it? When did he do it already?
Hitman.
Hitman is all about super
and
looking
I,
stupid.
I loved Hitman.
Yep.
Hitman was the same sort of, but I don't know. Hitman was really, and they never finished publishing.
Then again, it was original because it was what, like 7 years
It also took place in Gotham, which I thought was really bold.
Yeah.
But other than that,
I don't think Garth Ennis. Well, Fury, I guess, kind of, but not really. I mean,
Fury
Punisher,
was just a Fury was to me.
Punisher is very much like that.
I don't like. Yeah, I stopped reading Punisher
when he used Spider-Man as a club. I mean, that was the whole idea was that supers were stupid. That's you know.
I think that. But Ennis does two kinds of books now. This doesn't count Preacher because Preacher's like an aberration. But Ennis does.
I don't think Preacher's an aberration at all.
It is for him. He hasn't done anything like that or since. And I don't, which is not a problem. I don't care. It's fine. You do your really huge piece of work and you do something else. But he does these kind of books, which are the, like he plays in superhero universes, but sort of backhands them at the same time because he doesn't really want to. But you kind of get the fact that this pays the bills. And then he does his World War II stories, which he loves. Completely different tone. And the Fury book was actually just one of those World War II stories in my mind. Did you read it, Connor?
Yes. Fury, and I'm reading his current one, which is not that good.
Battle of Britain?
Yeah.
I mean, and war stories and things like that. He researches something about World War II, some small, like a tank commander in Russia, and he does a story about that thing. And they're completely different than these. These are just him futzing around, sort of.
Yeah.
Because he knows that it makes lots of fanboys just be like, oh, you hit him hard.
Yeah,
you know, and like the first page is the eye pop, the guy's skull getting crushed, and it's just, I've been there so much, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's rough. I mean, the question is, are you gonna keep on buying it?
I don't know.
That's the question.
You know what? I'll tell you what it depends on. If in a month I go to the store and I have 15 books or 10 books, and this comes out, the number two comes out. I might pass on it, like if it's too much money. If I'm only getting a few books that week, I might get it.
I hear you. I think I'll stick with it for a little while, just because I just want to see kind of where it goes. But it's on a thread. So.
I agree. If it's not going anywhere new, then forget it.
Yeah. So this is
let's hit the traditional superhero book.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening to me. Like, I'm just like we're like, thank God we can talk about 52 again. Like that's making me excited.
So our first casualty in 52. Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, so
no, they did say that people would not survive 52.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the cover doesn't really futz around much with that. I mean,
no,
if you look
it
at it,
you can... yeah, no, exactly. The cover just comes out there and tells you that Booster Gold gonna bite it. But so now,
do you really think he's dead?
You know, he looked pretty fried to me.
Well, if he was Wolverine, he could come back from that.
Well, the thing about Booster Gold is that he came from the future. So who's to say that Booster Gold from the future, right before he came back from the future, originally comes back again? You know what I also caught when he was falling, and Clark said to whomever, said, "Don't worry, we'll get him."
Yeah,
I was getting the sense that Supernova was going to be Superman in this.
You think? I think he looks a little.
No, I did in the first half of it.
He's too
thin. He doesn't have his powers. I mean, if you look at the 1 year later Superman books,
I still don't know what Supernova's powers are. Well, as far as I can tell, they're light.
He glows.
Yeah.
And he flies.
I don't like Supernova. I don't like the mask.
You don't trust him.
Well, no. I don't because it's one of those...
A real hero wouldn't need to wear a mask.
Yeah, exactly. A real hero would register and tell me his identity.
the Supernova...
Whose side am I on?
Yeah. All right, here's... Ready for my controversial statement that'll get us definitely some hate mail.
Okay.
All right, bring it on.
I'm glad he's dead.
Wow.
I'm glad Booster Gold...
You think there's a lot of Booster Gold fans would be upset with you now?
Good riddance. Yes. I like them. I'm honestly upset that he's dead. I love.
Here's why: because what have they done with him in the last 5 years that's been interesting at all?
Nothing.
I don't know.
So therefore,
he's
worth more
gold.
as an interesting death than he is being in a boring story.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. There you go. And does Booster really need to exist without Ted Kord?
Not at all. And look, I'm a huge fan of the Justice League Keith Giffen era. And I know all the fans of that era are all mad because they feel like all those members are being killed off, and I guess they're right. But in that story, and he's good in that story, and he's entertaining in that story, and you can still go back and read those stories. But he's basically irrelevant in the modern day DCU. So kill him
off.
I think make him more interesting.
I think what people forget is that they forget three important things: that those stories aren't going anywhere, and you can go back and read them. That Keith Giffen. There was no plans to go back to telling those kind of stories. We had our little taste a couple of years ago, but that was it.
Plus, he's a curmudgeon, and he said kill them all.
Right, yeah, no, and the last point is that he's freaking involved in 52. He's doing the layouts. Mm-hmm. So yeah. He's blessing everything they're doing, so it's not
and
like he's
from
pissed.
The, convention we learned, he does have some story input just because he's Keith Giffen. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't think it's – I agree with you. I don't think it's that bad that he's dead, but I'll miss him. I like him.
I was enjoying the storyline.
Yeah.
I thought it would go on longer. I don't feel like I learned anything. Like, all of a sudden he's dead, and I was like, but they didn't finish his story. But I assume that will get finished.
Well, his story was that he was, a fraud and a failure, and then he went out as a hero.
I hope he's really dead, though, because...
I do, too, just because he's not doing anything.
Right, yeah. So.
And some characters, they've got a shelf life, and then...
No, I think it will, it's one of those things, if you make it not real, then what's the point? It's 6 feet under. And after a while, you got to realize when something crazy was happening, it was obviously a dream. So I never trusted the show after that. I don't want to not trust the comics. You know what I'm saying?
But it's,
right,
you know,
no, but
it's,
the...
We're way beyond that point.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, way, way.
Well, right, so then the original thing now would be to do, when you do things, make them count and make them matter.
Yeah.
And that's...
Also, but as a character, he was perfect for that Justice League book, and... I couldn't even tell you anything significant he has been in since then.
Other than the revisiting of it.
Right, and that's just the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Him and Blue Beetle. They found a way to use Blue Beetle in the Birds of Prey, which was kind of neat. But other than that, they existed perfectly for that one book, but since then they've got nothing to do, so might as well use them in this way.
Yep.
All right, moving on. Is there any other books you just wanted to mention?
Real quickly, Civil War X-Men number 2.
Yes.
I have two just real quick things about this. There are, in terms of being an X-Men fan, there are two kinds of X-Men. There's people who get the X-Men and write it well, and that you've got the Claremonts and from the back in the day, and you've got right
Claremont.
Now what's the, no from back in the day.
So Claremont straddles both categories then.
Yes, yeah. Well, does. No, you don't. I haven't even said the second category yet. So just hang
sorry,
on.
Sorry.
So there's that.
Piss
and
off, I fanboy night.
And so there's that, and then there's the people who don't get it and who ruin it, and the Scott Lobdells and the 90s and Bob Harris and all that kind of stuff. And the guy who's writing, who wrote the 198 and now is writing Civil War X-Men, this David Hein guy, I don't think he gets it. And
listen,
it's between you and me,
this guy?
Yeah, I don't think he gets it. and this was the first issue that really kind of starting to get me scared about that. Because I don't know what kind of ramifications that might have, but that's just kind of like my little fear. But my nitpick is, and neither of you guys picked up this book, so you didn't see it, but they've unveiled the government has a new Sentinel design, and it's getting to be all like mecha manga Sentinel thing. And I'm just
really?
Like, oh no, please don't leave that shit away. Like Sentinels should be like the classic Sentinel design is one of the most classic character designs in history, and you can tweak it and you can evolve it and do whatever you want to do, but like that mecha transformer look just
it's
not
like mecha Iron Man.
Exactly, it's not supposed to be here, so just get rid of it. You know what I mean, it's not an evolution. It's just like well this look is pretty popular and the manga kids, they like this stuff, and so like let's make it look like this, that'll sell.
Right.
If you look at when next time you go to the store, look at the cover of this book, or go online and look at the cover of this book. I was just like, what is this, Voltron? I mean, it wasn't.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it would be cool. That would be awesome. So, anyway, so that's my little X-Men rant. So I don't know if anyone
is that a 4-issue miniseries?
I don't know. Fucking know. I have no clue. So,
how much damage could they do in 4 issues? Really?
Who knows? So
not.
All right. Any other books worth discussing? Or
Robin was good.
Robin was really good. We keep telling you to go buy it. Like if you want just superhero
slam bang superhero action.
It's good stuff, and it's smart, and it's cool. Fun, and it's well drawn.
So there's a little bit of news we wanted to touch on, right? Before we move on.
The big story this week in comics is that Civil War got all screwy.
Connor?
Civil War has been delayed.
But what's been delayed? Was Civil War number 4 supposed to come out this week?
Yes, supposed to come out this week. So was Justice League's number 1, but that is only being delayed by 1 week.
Okay, and how long
Civil War? Let me get the actual number here. Let me pull it up. This is not just affecting the Civil War book. It's affecting the entire line of books.
Right, because stuff that happens in each
adding,
book.
Yeah, it's all interconnected. So they're adding an actual issue to Frontline. So we're going to have 11 issues of Frontline, which everyone's excited about because no one really likes Frontline. I'm trying to find it. You guys talk.
Basically,
stall.
Civil War was told that it would be delayed for about a month. It's going to be sometime in September. Connor will give it to you. And everyone was like, "Well, why? Did they change the story? Did they do such and such?" It's because Steve McNiven's behind on pencils, basically.
Yes. Oh my God, you're kidding me. No. So they're going to be 2 months in between Civil War issues.
Well, Civil War is, yeah, basically, yes. Everything's getting pushed back. Issue number 5 is going to come out in November now.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
4 is coming out next month, at the end of September, and 5 is coming out in the middle of
So it's
November.
A bi-monthly book now?
At this point.
But here's why.
Yes.
They blew it.
No, wait. Let's. I actually posted this on the site because people first immediately just started attacking and getting really vitriolic about it. But basically, McNiven says that they threw the book at him like they were started. You need to start on this right now. He had no lead time. And people are like, well, what does that mean? I think it means that he's drawing a bunch of characters he's never drawn before, for example. And you need time to figure out how to draw them, how to draw those facial expressions, how to make those characters come alive on your page. McNiven is a hell of an artist. We all agree with this, right?
Yes.
And it got to the point where he's like, I'm falling behind. I'm not going to be able to get it in time. And they said, well, we can either bring in a fill-in artist. We can, you know, this Ramon Box guy can do an issue real quick.
No.
Right, exactly. Or they can have McNiven so that when it's all said and done, you've got the 7 issues that all look good and consistent.
Right, but here's the problem. Here's the thing. How many books did Jack Kirby draw in the height of the days?
Listen.
The art is way more complex.
Art is much more complex right now. Look at the rendering on a Steve McNiven drawing.
It's way more detailed.
It takes longer. Some of the best artists working right now can't do a monthly book anymore. Brian Hitch can't do a monthly book. Frank Quitely can't do a monthly book. You know, Steve McNiven, I don't know if he can do a monthly book, but he can't do this book monthly.
But it's a big-ass hard project, and he does great work. But here's the thing is that we're talking 22 pages, okay? There are 28 days in a month, and we're saying that the standard rate for an artist should be about a page a day. So something doesn't add up there then.
No, but you're saying that the art that's being done now is the same as the art that was always
done. No. I'm not saying that. I didn't say that at all.
You did in the beginning.
Jack Kirby could do it. I was making the comparison that Kirby and all them banged out a shitload of books in no time.
You can't tell me that the
– I'm moving my argument on to the fact that you're right. The detail is there, and with all the computer coloring and all the shit that goes on now, it's more complicated and that sort of thing. But even then, he's drawing one book on a monthly basis. If there's any concern about it falling behind, they should – you know, like this. It's the same problem that happens over and over again. I mean, like, you know, like how – you know, when New X-Men came out, and it was Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, and then we started, you know, then Igor Cordy started filling in for Quitely, and then was doing complete story arcs. And how many issues of New X-Men did we actually see from Frank Quitely?
And that's like, why they're delaying it so that you don't get the fill-in artist whose art is not as good.
Because
as
at the end of the day, those the sales that they're going to lose because everybody's still going to buy it.
Right.
They're not going to lose $1 from sales.
So now maybe we should go back and chart over the past 5 years how many months late Ultimate Spider-Man has been.
Listen, I would.
Bagley's a machine. He's a machine.
But I would say
he's an anomaly.
But his art also isn't up to the quality of Steve McNiven.
Oh, I would say that his art is up to the quality of Steve McNiven.
No
they're both
way.
They're both fairly detailed.
No
I think Bagley
way.
Is definitely detailed.
Bagley
yes.
doesn't even do backgrounds.
Yes, he does.
You're not the same.
You're too harsh on Bagley.
I'm not, but he's not the same artist. Bagley can do 18 books a month because he does a lot of line drawings. He does simple things. Whereas McNiven's got a whole rendered style. It's almost photographic in parts. Like, it takes longer.
Maliv was never late?
I can't tell you why some artists take longer than others.
I just find it
unprofessional and unacceptable. I'm glad that they're not putting like a Raymond Bax or a fill-in artist on it.
Let me put this in a way that you understand. If you took your favorite band and put them in the studio and said you have to make an album every 28 days, could all of them do it?
Hey, I'll go back to earlier in the podcast when I talked about Elastica. Their first record came out in 94, 95, and the second record didn't come out until like 99, 2000, 2001, and it was shit.
Different artists
working
at different
paces.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying is that it was anticipated, and they futzed around, and it never, and the quality wasn't there. I'm just saying that it's and I would say that Elastica turned out to be one of the more unprofessional bands because of that, and it tainted my long-term like of them. You know, and that's, and unfortunately, you know, it sucks that that now that's going to happen to Steve McNiven. I'm glad. I mean, it's a bittersweet kind of thing to swallow, because I'm glad they're not putting a fill-in artist on it, because I hate that, because you know how much I love the run and all that kind of stuff. But it's just another disappointment. It's just another thing that it's another thing to say that, you know, being late on a book is an okay thing.
They're not saying it's okay, and I think they're being. I think what I like about this is they're being upfront about it, and they're saying we've got the choice between expediency or quality, and we've decided, you know, to go with the quality. It cannot go any faster for whatever reason. He cannot work that fast.
My first point is it's ironic that we are talking about the first late book coming from Civil War, not 52.
Yeah.
Second point.
Yeah,
is,
but how many times have we said the art in 52 is meh,
is rushed and
right,
sucks?
But it's still, it's just funny that we thought for sure 52 would fall behind schedule, but it hasn't. Civil War did.
Yeah, no, I do appreciate that irony.
My second point is, at first I was really annoyed and kind of taken aback and caught up in the whole furor of it. But now that I think about it, and plus I read some, Brian Hitch wrote a really impassioned online post about this whole thing, and he totally swayed me to the other side now. Now I couldn't care less.
What did he say? He's the last person who should be, you know.
No, he's absolutely right. I'm going to quote him. He says, two of my favorite rereads and collections are Dark Knight and Watchmen. Nobody now remembers that each of these was late at the time the original periodicals were out.
Oh, interesting.
It's 25 true. Years, nobody's going to care. They're just going to buy the trade paperback. And for me, I'd rather have the 7-issue Steve McNiven book. A perfect example of this is Infinity Gauntlet, which George Perez drew for the first 4 issues, I believe. And it was becoming an epic storyline, and then he couldn't finish, and Ron Lim finished the last 2 issues, and it just completely destroyed the miniseries for me.
Yeah.
The point where I'd never buy the trade paperback of it, because I don't want the fill-in artist. I'd rather have had George Perez all 6 issues instead of 4.
Yeah,
I'd rather have Steve McNiven all 7. I don't care if I wait 2 months, because honestly, in the grand scheme of things, in a year from now, I won't remember that he was late.
But that's the thing, and like I said, it's bittersweet, and I'm torn on it because I agree, because I'm an early McNiven guy, and like it a lot. But the problem is that it's a combination of a trend in the industry of allowing for it to happen, or at least not, you know, not preparing for it, and then and then along with the fact that Watchmen and Dark Knight, that's a really good point, and I didn't know that, and I didn't remember that. But the fact is that those were self-contained stories, and the thing is that Marvel has built up the mass of
and that's where they fall behind. That's
exactly,
you can't defend them on.
Exactly, two thirds of all of their titles are now need to be pushed back because of the domino effect. And that's when it becomes a problem.
Every single book that's related to Civil War is being delayed.
I mean, that's the thing. Is like, and don't get me wrong. Like aside from this, like my life, my job, and my you know, stuff I do is managing projects and managing timelines and managing expectations and all that kind of stuff. And when you slip and you miss a date, there are consequences, and there are no consequences in comics. And that's all, you know.
Because we'll all buy them. But
right,
the thing
exactly.
is, for the and I put this up on the site, for the at the end of the day, Marvel doesn't stand to lose any money from this.
Right, yeah.
Their trade is still going to come out. People are still going to buy it. We're all going to buy the issues. I don't really care if it's a month later.
Yeah.
I'm not
in
even
going to
notice.
They're
going
to make more money because they're adding books.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. It
didn't happen in the old days, though.
It's
because
disappointing. It's disappointing, I'll say that, but I don't really care anymore. And I think, honestly... I think that comics should abandon the monthly model anyway.
Well, and that's the thing. Oh. That's the thing. That's kind of the point that I'm subtly making, is that if this is the state of the affairs that we're in, then take the month away from the cover and just have it be Civil War #4. And they probably don't have a month on the Civil War thing, but like if they abandon the monthly kind of thing, like acknowledge it. Acknowledge that the medium has evolved and the artists cannot keep up, and therefore the books come out when they come out.
People on the one hand demand the really great art with the detailed rendering and the coloring. But the other hand, they freak out when it doesn't come out every 4 weeks. So I think at this point you have to either say comics are going to be bi-monthly, they're going to be a little thicker, they're going to be every 3 months, they're going to be twice as big, or here's the radical one that I thought about on the subway home the other day, is that if they announce tomorrow that comics are going all trades every 6 months, six issues worth of comics comes out all at once in a trade, I wouldn't blink an eye.
Yeah, or you could do what
I probably would prefer it.
Or you could do
you've come a long way, baby.
You could take the approach that I would, which I think the business would freak out and not do, but like don't solicit any of the issues until they're done.
Right. I don't think they could do that simply right. because of the distribution system.
Well, no, they could do that with the distribution. I mean, they could do it if they wanted to.
Comic stores wouldn't go for that.
Speaking of comic stores, it's time to move on.
Yes.
Really quickly, though, also on a side note, All-Star Batman and Robin.
Oh, who cares?
Number All-Star Batman and Robin was the next issue, whatever the notion. I don't even know because it's been so
who
long.
Who cares?
It's been re-solicited again for another month delay, so that one's...
You should. I think, as opposed to Civil War, I think everybody should punish them and
not
buy them.
Drop the All-Star Batman title. Seriously. Frank Miller's not worth it. It's not even Frank Miller art. It's just his writing.
I'm going to really consider it. Just
Come on, do it.
Ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, do it.
Do you know who...
I'll do it if Ron drops Civil War X-Men.
let me think about that.
All right, come on, let's go. Sponsor right. someone.
Whoa, look at the time.
I know.
Comicool.com is your best solution for discounted comics and trade paperbacks. Awesome trade paperbacks. All new Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image books are 40% off. Stop by their site each month and pre-order the books you want, or if you prefer, use their subscription service and have them automatically send you the same books each month. In addition to current comics, they have excellent selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers at 30-50% off. With more books arriving every month, check them out at comicool.com and let them know you heard about us. The Rye Fanboy, the deal is over, but you can still let them know you heard about us here.
Yeah, that would help
us. Comicool.com. Check them out today. And I know people today on the site were talking about, people who had missed the pick of the week were talking about pre-ordering it from Comicool. So
yeah, go to Comicool.
People must like it.
And people have used it on there lately. They've liked it. I liked it when I used it. So there you go.
I liked it.
All right,
listener email. So, all right, we got to blow through these. Tim wrote in. He had a question based off watching our San Diego video. He was surprised that we didn't know anything about Naruto. He wanted to know if we actively disliked manga or if we're just ambivalent, don't want to spend any more money on comics than we already are. He lives in Japan, so he's kind of interested to notice this.
Ambivalent.
I missed that boat. I think that was...
I think we've read some. I think is...
Honestly, like
Scott Pilgrim is like a weird American manga hybrid. Like that's the whole new style that's coming out, is that it's not pure manga from Japan. It's manga from Americans who grew up on manga.
Manga, I believe.
Manga.
See, we don't even know.
We don't.
But that's so Scott Pilgrim is a little manga-ish, Americanized manga. And I think isn't Eagle manga?
Eagle was actually it was actually Japanese.
It's also like I just don't want to spend any more money, and I'm just not. There hasn't been a manga title that has compelled me to get it, and sure as hell, some cartoon on Cartoon Network isn't going to do it.
Yeah. So I mean I don't want to sound like we're a little too old for it. It's not that we just never got into it.
All right. So thank you, Tim, for that observation. And
I loved all of Lone Wolf and Cub, but I don't think that counts.
Okay. So our next email is a fun one. Mainly because he titles it to fanboys with a Z. But Kevin P from Doylestown writes in about the video. And on an aside, we get a lot of email, and we get a lot. We actually get if you ask me an unbelievable amount of praising email. And we don't get that much, kind of criticizing email, which is cool, which is awesome.
Here comes the criticizing.
He just finished watching the iFanboy video, and he says, wow, he didn't know what he was expecting, but he was way let down. In no interview did he hear a slightly intelligent question about anything. I guess like any of us fanboys out there, the main emotion was starstruck, and getting anything out of other than one or three canned questions was impossible. He knows we didn't want to ask the typical what happened in X issue question, but at least something that tells us as an audience we actually read the book of the person you're talking to could have helped. I know it's your first con taping, so I'll give you a break this time. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for giving us a break. He enjoys the podcast and wants to make it better by
a TV producer.
Hang on, he enjoys the podcast and wants to make it better by adding his constructive criticism. Thanks for showing him an event that he didn't know existed because he's new to reading comics. Best of luck at future cons. So first off, I like constructive criticism. That's really good, and he brings up some good questions.
Yes.
So how do we want to answer them?
Well, first of all, there were maybe two instances of Starstruck. Which we'll be completely candid about. One is Brian Singer, because we just didn't expect it. Ron was, thrust in there, and it's Brian Singer. He's a big-time filmmaker. And the other one was it Joss Whedon?
It was Joss Whedon. The Paul Dini thing, I don't think – I honestly don't think we were that starstruck by Paul Dini. I think we were just more
– No, we weren't at all, actually.
We were more giggly because of our own kind of weird fandom type thing. And what actually did make the video is that there was actually a somewhat lengthy conversation with Paul about Batman, which we actually cut out.
Here's the thing, though. We didn't – we went into this with specific goals in mind. As Josh joked about before, Josh and I at least have experience making television, and so we had plans, and our idea was not to ask questions about comics, because you can go to any Newsarama site or any interview site and read all about the artists and their comic book work. We wanted to know more about the convention experience, not just from the people at the convention, but also from the creators, and that was our goal in the video. We could have easily talked about Queen and Country with Greg Rucka, or Detective Comics with Paul Dini, or Astonishing X-Men with Joss Whedon, but we didn't. That wasn't our
The point for us, just so you know, in case you didn't get it from it, it was, this is what the con is like. And we were like, here are some of the people there. And to us, we had never seen a lot of these people in this context anywhere that like fans could go see them. We'd never seen somebody on video joking around with Robert Kirkman, or we'd never seen, you know, Greg Rucka. We've read interviews with them. We've heard them on podcasts. We've done all sorts of things, you know, and you know, they're just out on the floor. We were running and gunning, and you don't really get a chance. You don't do a Charlie Rose interview like that, and then we couldn't have done it anyway.
And I think the ironic thing is that in that con environment, and Kevin, I mean, like, you didn't even know San Diego existed before this, and if you ever get to go, you'll kind of know what we're talking about. And this is, I think, with any of the major cons, be it Chicago or now the New York one or whatever, is that, you know, when you're actually talking to Greg Rucka and you've asked him to do an interview, honestly, the last thing any creator wants to talk about is what happened in issue X, blah, 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 because it's just so overwhelming, and the experience is just, it's just comics, 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 and the panels and all that kind of stuff. So we tried to take it into, let's not talk about the comics and the specific details, and more, like Connor said, about the experience of it. You know, about, like, what is it like to be here, you know? And so,
if you want to hear about Greg Rucka's comics, go listen to the Word Balloon interview he did, or go read any interview he's done online. I mean, there's a plethora of places to hear about their writing or their art or whatever they do. There's no, you know, we wanted to come at a unique point of view.
I would say that in almost every single interview that we did with these people, you got to see, I mean, they were all unique to the person. They weren't like, oh, do you like the con? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
What should you see? Like, they talked about it. Greg Rucka talked about his behavior towards fans and the way that he does it. That's him. Robert Kirkman, you know, that was just weird.
A nut job.
Yeah. What was that?
I think the important thing is that going into it is that, I mean, like, whether you believe it or not, we read the books of these creators, and I was, you know, I honestly could care less about, you know, details about Invincible or anything like that. I wanted to meet Robert Kirkman and get a feel for what he was like as a person, you know, so.
And he was awesome.
He was awesome.
Creeped right out.
Yeah, creeped me totally out. But Kevin, we do appreciate the constructive criticism, and we're glad that you wanted.
Oh, it was a good email, because it wasn't you guys sucked. That was stupid. It actually had points.
It was great. So please keep them coming. Okay, well, the next two really aren't questions, but they're just kind of interesting emails. St. Paul Doug writes in, and this is, I thought this was resonated with us because we've been bitching and moaning about the money aspect. And he shares that most recently he hasn't had the money to follow single issues or to pick up trades. So what he's been doing is he went to his local public library and found out that his library has Fables, Why the Last Man, Queen of Country, all this good stuff. So he was just kind of reminding us that if you live in, you know, a town that's got a really good county library, or in a big city, or anything that has a good library, go on to their online site, check their internet database, and see what books are there. So thank you again, St. Paul Doug, for reminding us that your local library does carry comics.
Yeah.
And finally,
our libraries.
I used to read before I had enough money. I used to go read Preacher and trade form at Borders.
Nice.
I'd go like once a week, and I'd be like, I read book two this week.
I used to go to Borders with my friend, and we'd sit through the graphic novels, and he was a casual comic fan, and when we'd go to Borders or Barnes & Noble, I'd tell him, like, oh, check this out, and, like, the third or fourth time that we went, it was the first time I actually rode home with him, and when we got in the car, he lifts up his shirt and pulls out, like, three trades, and I was like, you stole them? He's like, yeah, every time you tell me a book to get, I steal it. I was like, why are you stealing? It's
like, you an accessory.
I know, it was awful, but it was funny. Anyway. Our last email comes from Rachel Cutler, who writes in, and again, not a question, but write in to let us know that in answer to Connor's question last week as to why do people listen to us and what do they do and that sort of thing.
That wasn't really why.
Well, no.
How'd they find us and why they back in comics, which we got a lot of good responses on.
Exactly. So Rachel let us know that she and her husband Jack have always collected comics, and they're actually a fun comic collecting couple, which is pretty cool. That they both like their comics, and they both enjoy the podcast, and they actually listen to us while they eat their Sunday dinner. because it's a lot like sitting with their friends and talking comics.
I hope they're on to dessert now, because this one's running long.
Yeah, so so thank you, Rachel and Jack, and please pass the peas. So, it was funnier when I said it earlier. So if you have an email, if you have a question that you want to ask us or want to tell us, share something with us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can call us and leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697. Call in with the questions, because
we like the voicemails and we love the emails, but we also really enjoy the voicemails.
Yeah, we like to hear from our listeners, be it either email or voicemail in any way, shape, or form. So if you've got the time, you know, drop us a line. So, all right, let's wrap this up
ahead of time.
No, I just sometimes you know when you just start rhyming and you can't stop.
Connor, real quick, Frapper.
We're either at 294 or 307, depending on what number you believe on Frapper.com.
Let's go with 294. I think 294 is more realistic.
That's safe. So you could maybe put a pin in our map, and you could see where all the other iFanboy listeners are. The ones who
www.frapper.com/iFanboy. You could join Russ Mann, Matt Kramer, Target 242, Rachel and Jack Cutler, the aforementioned couple, Gomer, James, Cammy Knox. It's too long for the thing, so it's probably Knoxville. Mark Ronaldo, Richard Nielsen, Jake, Luke Bat, Justin Walker, and Fred.
So people are coming along a lot and fast.
And so if we're at 294, that means people...
six away.
We're close to 300. Let's go. Over the top.
You could be the lucky 300th rapper person. So.
And you will get no prize.
Get a no prize. So if you want to do that, go to frapper.com/ifanboy or click the banner in the upper right-hand corner at ifanboy.com.
You could also do something similar. You could go to our MySpace page.
Yes.
Which is
myspace.com/ifanboy.
Yeah, that's.
We've got a little over 100 friends, right? So
we're up to more than a little 130 something now.
Oh, 130. All right,
pretty fast.
Awesome. I try not to go there.
MySpace.
Stop. So so go to myspace.com/ifanboy and do that. Also, you can go to Podcast Alley or iTunes and you can vote for us or write a review or give us a star rating or whatnot. But even more important than that, you know, if you've got friends that read comics or people that shop at your store and they're not listening to the podcast, be it ours or anybody else's, tell them about it. Spread the word. That's the best way to get people on board. So And
you can come to ifanboy.com. All the discussion is there. All the good stuff. All the books we didn't get to talk about. All the talk is there.
And
it's a lot
of
talk this week.
A lot of talk. And also, we had the pick of the week was Phonogram Number One, and Jamie whatever his name is came to the site and posted. Jamie McKelvey.
That's
came to the site and answered a question from one of our readers. So that was pretty cool. So hopefully, some more creators will be coming our way. and finally, if you like what we do and you want us to keep on doing it, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations and send a couple of dollars.
Please give me money.
Send a couple of dollars our way so we can pay our bills and keep giving you the quality content. So,
and I...
Oh, wait, quality.
oh, shit.
Should have mentioned that in the beginning, then it would have been...
No, let's just bitch about deadlines for 30 minutes.
Deadlines.
That's what the people are like. Somebody's going to call, I want my $20 back.
Deadlines. All right, so we've run late, so we should probably wrap this up. So thanks for listening. Another week. I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'll be Josh.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Dun, 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 dun.
Woo!